Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is lead analyst Logan Motoshami to talk about Biden's plan for housing, the Fed, mortgage rates, and possible rate cuts, plus jobs week. We have a lot to cover. Logan, welcome back to the podcast.
We survived another jobs week. Yes, and mortgage rates look like they're going to end the week at recent lows too. So a lot has gone on this last week. I think these are one of these weeks that you have to kind of like review everything that happened.
Okay, well, let's start there. First, I want to talk about Biden. So, a couple weeks ago, or a couple of times, you and I have talked about how, with the Fed not doing anything, eventually it's gonna, Main Street's gonna trickle up to legislature or the White House, whatever, DC, to say you've got to do something about housing. So, we saw Biden announce yesterday ahead of the speech, and then in the State of the Union speech, directly address housing. Talk about what he said he would do.
Now, when we first talked about this, we said, this is the third calendar year of not only great recession lows, but all-time lows in home sales. Because if you take the population and our demographics, especially now, our demographics are good. We have a lot of people ages 30 and 39. So it starts to wear on you. It's like, here's this strong economy, and all of a sudden, home sales are at the lowest levels ever. And it's like, wait a second. So we're not getting any rebound kick. In 2013 and 14, when rates went higher and demand fell, eventually rates went lower, demand picked up. 2018 and 19, same thing. COVID. Here, not only was, we're in the third year of the lowest sales ever, the forward-looking data was getting negative. So eventually, right, it gets to you. And not only did President Biden have to go out there and talk about it, Jerome Powell kind of blinked as well. And so did President Daley, San Francisco Fed. So it's one thing to say inflation, inflation, inflation. We must, when it's running at 6, 7, 8, 9%, it's a whole different ballgame when you're running at 2.4 to 2.8% headline PCE and core PCE. So eventually it comes back. And neither Biden or Powell can kind of run away from this. And both have kind of done things and said things this last week that are very telling, that it's finally hitting some of the nerves of people that, push some of the buttons, and they're trying to find a way to get things started again. This doesn't mean you cut interest rates to zero, you do QE or anything, but you got to have some kind of movement to the upside. It starts to get really iffy when you go into the third and fourth years of the lowest demand in sales ever in history within any sector of the economy. So it's not shocking, but to see Biden and Powell both kind of blink at the same week was interesting at this point.
No, I agree. Of course, the interesting thing is, so as a journalist, as someone who loves housing, I was just glad to hear housing in the State of the Union speech. I cannot tell you how many election cycles, how many State of the Union speeches, primary things, I mean, debates that I've sat through, that housing never gets brought up. So especially in this environment when housing is in crisis, because of interest rates, it's great to hear it come up. But of course, Biden is saying, he's not doing executive action. He's calling on Congress to do these things. So the possibility that
Which means it's not going to happen. Well,
Exactly.
you know what? It's interesting. Housing's one of these things where, both parties could kind of get in line, because you have to realize that a lot of, states and cities depend on tax revenue from housing. So it's not necessarily, to anyone's benefit. The housing's one of these sectors that you could get. Like, I always remember in the 2012 FHA Solvency Act that got passed. Back then, that was probably the most, Congress that never got anything done. They got that done very quick, both parties. So we'll see what happens. But I'm as I've told you this, Sarah, one of the reasons I started to write was because I hated the first time homebuyer tax credit so much the first time around. And I'm never going to be a fan of anything like that. It's just not in me. I think the supply and demand equilibrium works on it. And I just, to me, rates got very sloppy to the upside. And then there's one thing to have the 10-year yield up here, but the spreads are bad. Like, for example, today mortgage rates are 6.85%. If we had normal spreads, they're 5.85%. If that happens, Biden doesn't really need to talk about anything. Okay, demand will be slowly picking up and we move forward. But the fact that rates are this high and the Fed just kind of didn't want to say anything about it, we're resorted to these kind of things. Now, anything that produces more supply of homes in terms of production, sign me up. I mean, we wrote that thing in 2021, right? Probably one of the more important pieces of work I've ever written in the last 13, 14 years. But you know, trying to get the building cycle to not revolve around economic cycles so much. Because look, we already lost the apartment boom. Apartment permits are heading lower. We're probably going to be heading to the COVID-19 lows. So anything on the production side, I'm all for. On the demand side, it's just, you know, and one of the things I don't agree with Jerome Powell or anyone on this, they keep on saying that people don't want to give up their low mortgage rates. Well, we're still having, you know, near 5 million total home sales a year. People do it every single week. We just don't have a lot of them because after qualified mortgage, the entire housing market dynamic shifted. We've never had a lot of people like, you know, sell their homes at once or anything in that matter. We've always had that supply and demand equilibrium because mortgage rates ran from 3.25% to 5% for 10 years. And we had that consistent about roughly 6 million around their total home sales toward the end of the decade, and mortgage rates went from 3 to 8. So you're going to get hit on the demand side. You don't list your house. So I'm not a supporter of that line of thinking. I'm not a supporter of any kind of demand initiative out there. The best way to deal with housing inflation is build homes. And the best way to build homes is not just upzoning or anything like that. You got to get money into the people's hands and you got to get things going. And we're just again, tied to the economic cycle on this. Thankfully, the builders are paying down mortgage rates. Because let me tell you, if the builders didn't do that, they're not selling as much new homes because we actually got a little glimpse of what 8% mortgage rates were doing, even to the builders. We saw that decline in new homes and new home sales aren't that high anyway. So anything on the production side, I'm up for. Anything on the demand side, I can't support that. I can never be a supporter of anything to stimulate demand by providing a tax credit.
So, you know, Biden came at it from both ends last night. So in the address, he called for a $10,000 tax credit for both first time home buyers and people who sell their starter homes over a 2-year period, right? And last night he broke it down to say, you know, that's $400 a month. And in his, you know, in what they put out, they're like basically, you know, it reduces your mortgage rate by about 1.5% on a median priced home for 2 years, right? So trying to come at that mortgage rate problem, affordability problem in a different way. And then, so that's the one that you would say, we don't need that help.
I'm not a fan of that.
I know. You know, it was one of the things that one of the first things he announced when he was elected was a first-time homebuyer tax credit. He also said a first-generation homebuyer tax credit. And one of the things even then that people were trying to figure out in our industry is how do you do that? So do you do that at the closing table? There was down payment. There was a lot of things that he came into office talking about. None of them went anywhere, or at least those things didn't go anywhere. So, but I remember we talked about at the time, like the last thing we need is more demand, you know. But he did talk about the supply side because, you know, he called for the construction and renovation of more than 2 million additional homes and cost reductions for renters. So what do you think about that proposal?
Do you know how many times I've heard politicians say that? We're going to build a lot of homes. Really? You know how about 20 years, 20 years I've been hearing this. We're going to build a lot. Oh, by the way, all those hedge funds that, you know, took those homes, you know, we're going to kick all those renters out. And, oh, wait a second. Are we kicking family people out? By the way, Sarah, if that ever did pass, I cannot wait to see the videos of having like American families get kicked out of their house because of some stupid rule that these people don't deserve to rent in a house, in a single family house. There's not that many single family rental house units available anyway. But we talk a lot about building. We talk a lot. We talk a lot that we're going to do this. Nothing ever happens, right? It just doesn't. I think the apartment boom that we saw, or the, you know, duplex in those areas where we do see building, like in, you know, Texas, Austin, those things were producing a lot of homes, a lot of apartments. Those things are good. Let's just emphasize on that. And again, part of the problem is mortgage rates and long-term rates and short-term rates are getting too high again. And what happens when you stay restrictive enough, we see what happened. The apartment boom is over. And if the builders weren't providing lower mortgage rates, you know, the single family permits would be falling too. So I welcome anything that says we're going to build a lot of homes. I just don't see it ever doing anything. And part of the problem is construction productivity is terrible. It has been terrible for a very long time in America. So we have limits on what we can do. So I was so happy to see the apartment boom, what it was doing. And I hope we finish as many of those projects as possible. But there's limits to what you can do with supply and demand economics unless the government comes in. And like we wrote about that in 2021, the government's going to have to pay people to do this because nobody's a march of dimes here. People have to make money to do this stuff. And if you take the economic cycle away, you know, you get a little bit more production. That's why the it's a shame that, you know, rates have gone up so much so fast, because we really did have a good apartment boom. And that's a good thing. We see apartment rents coming down. Why? Supply and demand economics. Look, more supply coming up, you know, less competition, more supply. Nobody can keep on charging. That's how you defeat inflation. So I'm encouraged by anything that says we're going to do. I just need to see it. And I saw this apartment boom happen, you know, and it was a positive. And unfortunately, we've lost that. And single family construction has limits, right? If we're allowing the builders to do it their way, has anybody looked at the housing completion chart? Like, from the census, it has got literally, my tortoise is faster than this thing. It has gone nowhere for years. There's no more COVID anymore. You can't even use that excuse. It has gone nowhere. It's the saddest chart we have. But this is what we do in America. We can't build houses fast enough or anything enough. So you have to throw, what's the one thing that could get people to do stuff? Money, right? Get money out there. They'll get things done, right? So we'll see. I'm happy anything on the production side, but I'm mindful that we've always made promises like this for a very long time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Talking a little bit more about building, the Seattle mayor came out with a one Seattle plan. They've been working on like that middle housing plan. It's been in the works for a couple of years, and they pushed something out this week that the people that I follow, which are a lot of real estate folks, developers, builders, things like that, have just have taken it to the cleaners because they just feel like it is a misguided plan. So the whole point was to build this middle housing, but the way this was announced, you know, where you're going to be able to build it, what the restrictions still are, it's just so hard to see how that's going to help in any way. And that's the thing, is like, you can at a federal level say, we're going to stimulate, you know, home building, but that home building happens within, you know, states and cities and counties that have all of these hoops you have to jump through, even when people are really trying.
You know, the builders will build homes because they're not the March of Dimes. They want to make money. And when rates go lower and demand goes up, they'll build. Somehow, miraculously, they always go, I can't find any construction workers. Oh my God, new home sales are up. Let's build, you know? So, I mean, it's just, there's this supply and demand equilibrium with housing, especially on construction. And we see construction pick up when demand picks up. And that equilibrium has stayed its course. And where I disagree with everyone is that I actually don't believe the builders underbuilt in the last decade. I actually think they built perfectly in line with the demand curve because we had the weakest new home sales cycle ever recorded in the history of America. Please, everyone, go back, look at those charts. We had missed sales in 2013, 14, 15. We had a monthly supply spike in 2018. You're not putting your head down and building in that because you need to make money. So as long as we have that system, we have to still be in the reality of the world of, you know, the supply and demand equilibrium is based on, can you make money building these homes? And government invention, money, it's sloppy and everything, but if you really want it, you pay the builders because that's what they do. They're good at this, right? But they need to see this, okay? They're not doing this for a conscious, like all these people out there that said, we need to keep on building homes even though there's demand is low. It's like, homie, you have never been in the business of building homes in your life, really? Could you imagine how fast you would destroy your profit margins if that was the case? No, right? So we've got good builders that can do this. Figure out a way to get them to build. And of course, you know, we all should be grateful that the profit margins are still high enough where the builders can actually do. But again, rates go lower. Oh my God, it changes a lot of things. We're not even talking about this, right? Spreads get better. And this is where when Powell talked about, you know, when rates normalize, you know, things will get better. Housing will heal. You know, when Daley said, you know, it's expensive now, but when rates normalize, things will get better. I think it's finally hitting them, right? It's definitely was a change of tone this last thing. They're like, oh, you know, they see the apartment boom is over, right? The builders are holding things at bay by paying down mortgage rates. Simply, it is mortgage rates are too high, especially with the growth rate of inflation falling. Yeah, housing just gets disproportionately impacted here.
I think the language there, the language they're using is very passive, as if they don't have something very, you know, they're not an active player in rates. So it's like rates will come down, housing will heal. It's like this passive voice, something's out there is going to happen naturally. It's like, listen, you guys could make this happen today. You guys could, you guys are the ones who have pushed rates to where they are. So that passive language really bothers me.
You know, the interesting aspect, Sarah, was that toward the end of 2022, when everybody was thinking we're going into a recession and the bond yields took the 10-year yield down to the Gandalf line, that in itself changed the cycle, you know, because building started to pick up, housing, single family permits. Please, everyone, go back and look at the single family permits. When rates fell, miraculously, single family permits started. Oh my God, supply and demand equilibrium works there. And I think you're going to have to, at some point, let this 1970s go. We don't have the kind of backdrop like it was back then when housing was booming, even with higher rates. It's a much different cycle. So if the builders didn't, if the 10-year yield didn't fall toward the end of 2022 and early 23 and the builders weren't paying, we're having another discussion here. So production side of what Biden talked about, fine. We'll see if it ever happens. The demand side, I'm never a big fan of. But in this context, I think we're finally getting the Fed to think, we're going to need to, like, you know, if the growth rate of inflation, and, you know, he talked about, you know, we're getting rate cuts. We're almost there. They're starting to be like, okay, we're really holding this longer than, you know, maybe we should. And it's just one of these things where housing in an economy expanding, one of the first things I wrote for Housing Wire is where housing can get hit if an economy expands higher. Here, so much of this was about the growth rate of inflation. Well, the growth rate of inflation has fallen, right? The spreads are really bad right now. There are things that can be done like this to fix the problem. You don't need Biden. You don't need any of that. But we're just not. We need more confidence, Sarah. We need more confidence. What I would say is that you need to endure, right? You're just going to have to endure, because the only people that want higher rates are stock traders who whiffed on the recession call, who are pushing, shorting the bond market at this point, and, you know, needing, oh yeah, the Fed needs to sell the MBS and blow everything. Let's forget all of those people, right? We're talking about US economics and job cycles and everything. We want to keep the expansion going. We want people to have sex, have kids, buy homes. We forget the stock traders of America. Forget all of them on Twitter. And by the way, you could all go there and see the absolute anger of the 10-year yield getting toward 4% again. You know, they wanted that 4.33 to break. So there's things that can be done. The Fed's slowly moving. Today, like this last week was the first time I thought slowly moving into the direction where, you know, we want. But when you have 30 years of the lowest sales ever, that's what happens. Government kicks in.
That's what happens. So I want to dig in on rates a little bit, because other people listening to what he said, and especially looking at jobs today, feel like, oh, well, now they're not going to be as aggressive cutting rates. So explain to us why you think Powell blinked this week and what that means for short-term mortgage rates.
When I take the labor data, and of course, those labor articles I write for HousingWire goes over all my macroeconomic labor work. What I see right now is that a tight labor market is done. Job openings, quits are below 2019 level or 2020 levels. The employment cost index that the Fed says we should track is falling down as well. So we don't have a tight labor market in that sense. So the growth rate of inflation already falling so much, people naturally thought, well, mortgage rates should keep on going down. The Fed is, Powell's words, was very restrictive when the 10-year yield got up. They're still restrictive right now. They can cut and they'll still be restrictive. They are far from neutral. This is where Powell was trying to get people that second day in Congress to get understand. We are not anywhere pivoting or anything to be neutral. If we cut a few times, that's just here. And I think, again, there's a group of people in this country who want the Fed to break something. They want rates to go up. They want it. They're so angry that the U.S. isn't in a recession that they're like, bond traders, stock traders. Oh, so the fact that Powell even started to use that language that, hey, listen, we can cut and we're still restrictions. We are so far from neutral. He's right. This is our talking points here. We've been saying this for what, months? They could cut three times. They're still nowhere pivoting or anything. They're still restrictive. So I think there's just this fight in the marketplaces about what's going on. You know, do we need the 10-year yield? No, we don't. We do not need the 10-year yield at 5%. We don't need the 10-year yield at 4.25%. We can actually have a functioning economy with housing with the 10-year yield between 3.37 and 3.80. And we don't need to do government stimulus or anything. And we just get the marketplace moving again, and we'll be okay. We'll handle that.
So let's talk about the jobs week data. I know this is one of your favorite weeks because you love this data line. It's so key to your economic work. So let's talk specifically about what your expectations were and what happened.
So when I do my labor economic work, and I said that we're going to get all the jobs back lost to COVID by September 2022, then we're going to have to wait to get to 157, 159 million. We're about 158, almost 158 million by itself right now. I'm expecting the job growth data to slow down even a little bit more. It hasn't happened yet. This is why I gave myself a 2 million gap in the 157 to 159 level. So the job growth is slowing, but the fact that the quits percentage of job openings is pre-COVID and the hires are pre-COVID shows that it's not a tight labor market. And the longer, this is just my opinion, the longer you stay restrictive, the higher the probability of a recession happens, right? So there's a lot of people saying, why are you cutting rates? The economy is so strong. Why are you cutting? These are the people that don't think forward looking out, right? The history of economics say the longer you stay restrictive, credit card delinquencies go up, auto loan delinquencies have gone up, the apartment boom is over right now. the builders are hanging in there by paying rates. There are things in the economy that you can improve. But with rates this high, with a growth rate of inflation. And now the other thing about this cycle that's very unique, I don't think we have a lot of economic trackers that have ever had an economic cycle where nominal wage growth is so strong and the household balance sheets from homeowners look good. For renters, it's a much different story. We see the stress in the data for younger household renters, but homeowners are doing well in that stuff. So there has to be some kind of equilibrium middle where the jobs data is telling us, okay, things aren't tight and we don't stay in restrictive policy for a very long time. And this gets us to land the plane right now, because I promise you guys, I with every life that I have in my soul, nobody wants the 10-year yield between 3.37 and 3.80 that wants a recession. That is the very last thing the American bears, or Russian bears, or Chinese bears want to see, because that means people are buying homes again. If the spreads got better too, it would be a complete freak out. This is why you still have so many people saying, we need higher rates. We need to destroy the economy. We need Arthur Burrs, all this stuff. Listen, it's just one group of people, guys. Right. So I'm glad to hear that the Fed is finally like, oh, okay, let's just get it going and not be so hyper about every single little report, right? We didn't get any benefits of having the, you know, PCE data with a one handle on 3 to 6 months, but let's not freak out if things just stable out here, and let's just land the plane. And if we land the plane, we don't need Biden's plan or anything like that. But I understand the frustration out there. It's the third year of the lowest sales ever, right? And we have over 335 million. When a country is prospering, people buy homes, they have sex, they have kids, they move forward, right? And it's a little bit more difficult in the labor market if job quits percentages are falling and you have to go look for another job and mortgage rates are this high, when you're sitting at a very good place. And just in that context, unless you're working locally, if you had to, it becomes a little bit more difficult in that. That's the mobility factor. And it doesn't matter when job openings are high and the quits percentages are high, because guess what? You know, you have the ability, you know, there's a lot of jobs out there. You have more choices. But when the quits percentages comes lower and you lose your job, or you're looking for another job, the mobility factor starts to kick in. That's something that nobody really talks about, but this is why I follow the quits percentage on jobs weeks. And it's just telling us the tight labor market's gone. So I'm not comfortable being this restrictive at this stage, because people always go, well, guess what? The unemployment rate is always low before the recession starts. We want to prevent that. We want to destroy the stock traders in America that think you need to have a recession. We want pissed off stock traders that want the 10-year yield to go out and job. There is nothing more that makes me smile every day than taking these people to the woodsheds. But the longer you stay restrictive, the bigger their smile is, right?
Okay. Well, I want to remind our listeners that every weekday, Logan updates our Mortgage Rate Center with both a video and, you know, a little text clip to say, hey, I think this is where the market's going to go today. So you don't say mortgage rates are going to go to this percentage. What you say is, you know, mortgage pricing looks stable, or mortgage pricing is going to be up, or mortgage pricing is going to be down, because you're looking at what's coming in after the market opens and kind of where things are going.
Yeah, I just wait for like all the reports and then see how the 10-year yield reacts. And of course, you know, sometimes when there's not a lot of reaction in the 10-year yield, what the spreads do on that day can really matter. But it gives people somewhat of an idea early in the morning, after we digest any of the reports at 5:30 in the morning or 7 o'clock, to see that and we go through. So again, for me, everything revolves around the 10-year yield. And like we saw, guys, it could be a lot worse. That 4.34 level, that could have broke. We could have talked about 7.5%, 8% mortgage rates. Stock traders in America who want to see recession would be so happy. Putin would be happy. China would be happy. All these people who want to see recession would be happy. But it didn't break. It
did not.
Right? Kashkari, Neil, get your head out of here. Come on. Right? Go back to those Goldman Sachs roots when you talked about restrictive policy back in the day. All right, let's focus on just landing the plane. Come on, let's just get to this side. Where that whole 1970s thing was a bunch of malarkey right now. So don't fall prey for the people that despise you the most in this world. Give me a landing. Let me destroy as many American bears as I can. That's what I do. So let's just kind of get to that next stage. And the longer we stay restrictive, the higher the probability of recessions. That's how economic cycles have gone. We don't want to use the excuse, well, the economy's fine, so we need to know. You can land the plane. Inflation running at 7, 8, 9%. I hear you. Okay. Not the case anymore. By the way, we had the whole nerd thing this week, you know, where the BLS, oh my God, God bless the BLS. They provided like a 2-hour video. And homie, you guys are the best casting for nerds ever. I love it. I was like, these are my people. Like, you couldn't get actors that were as nerdy as these people in the BLS. It was awesome. I encourage everyone, if you want to bore yourself to tears, you go read about the dissertation on how they compute shelter REI inflation and the components that were going in. I found it fascinating, but I go, my God, we really are nerds. Like, we're all excited about this. And I'm sure everybody else is like, what the hell are they talking about?
We were
about?
Really so, glad. The newsroom was glad that you were paying attention to that and letting us know what we needed to know afterwards. And so, you know, give us just a one sentence, like, what were they trying to explain there?
I think they're just trying to say we had the biggest deviation ever from OER rent from what shelter was in that, like 30 years. That's completely off. It looks like to me this was noise, and it should kind of reverse itself quickly. And that, you know, some of the components of maybe putting in single family homes and multifamilies wasn't as big as of a factor in here, and things should calm down. Now, again, we all know the growth rate of inflation is falling for rents because the apartments are, guess what, you know, they're offering free months. You know, the rents aren't growing there, so. I think that's the thing. It's just shelter lags, and so much of it is rent. And there's a lot of it in lodging and all that other stuff, but it's really just rent out here. So single family rents are holding up fine. It's the apartments where the disinflation is happening.
And they were trying to explain their data.
Yeah, they were trying. Oh my God, it was beautiful, Sarah. It was so beautiful watching. We went technically, and the guy's like, I'm not going to do my equations just to make this more fluid. I was like, these are my people. So if you guys really, really, really want to know about rent inflation and the CPI index, I encourage everybody, the BLS, it's about an hour and 40 minutes. And we go through, and we had some really good Q&A questions. So it gives people an idea. But again, you really can't have inflation go back to the 70s unless rents take off. And it's really hard to have rents take off if wage growth doesn't take off. By the way, the wage growth spiral that all of you people were talking about, oh, wages are going to spiral out of control. The Fed has to destroy the company. It's like 21 months, the year-over-year wage growth. And this is one of the reasons why I thought the jobs number was kind of in the Goldilocks. The wage growth data was not as hot as the previous month said. So there's some things here, and we just got to get from the 70s talks. Man, that decade has been the bane and strife of everything for a very long time.
Okay, well, I will note here that I did ask you to say that in one sentence, and that was a lot longer, but I appreciate all of the context. I know our listeners.
You really think I could say anything in one sentence? No, I don't. Sarah Wheeler, come on now.
But I'm the one who has to watch the clock, and I'm like, okay, we're out of time. We're out of time. So anyway, I appreciate all of the explanations and the insights. Again, listeners, go to housingwire.com, look up the Mortgage Rate Center. By the time this comes out, our tracker article, Logan's tracker article, will be out over the weekend. So Logan, thanks for joining us and giving us all of your insight.
Pleasure is all mine, and to all the stock traders who want higher rates in a recession, que lastima.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.